From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on October 22, 1982, in Attica Prison. On that day, a local man with ties to Spiritus Christi Church sat surrounded by inmates, men who were serving life sentences. It was his job to lead that day's rehabilitation workshop. It was his first time running a prison group. The approach was an aggressive one. The program, called CEFAS, used what the man thought was a rather aggressive approach to help inmates take responsibility for the actions that led them to Attica. It also helped them uncover the pain and trauma that had led to their anger. And the workshop went well. And as he continued his work, the man used the CEFAS approach combined with a more nurturing, story-centered method. The balance became the foundation for his work helping men and women who were formerly incarcerated transition back into the community. He did that first at Rogers House, a home for formerly incarcerated men that opened in 1980, and now at Nielsen House for Men and Jennifer House for Women. The programs are part of Spiritus Christi Prison Outreach, and the man is Jim Smith. Spiritus Christi Prison Outreach has grown over the years, and it has helped many men and women transition out of prison or jail and avoid homelessness. Some participants have found work and have built meaningful lives, many of them giving back to the program itself. As the program continues to grow, it has a need for more space. We'll talk about that this hour, what they're doing about raising funds and helping expand that program. We'll talk about the program's success, and we'll welcome our guests now. The executive director of Spiritus Christi Prison Outreach is Jim Smith. Jim, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having us, Evan. Delighted to be here.
Sarah Lee is program director and an alumnus of Jennifer House, part of Spiritus Christi Prison Outreach. Sarah, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Evan. Thank you for the invite.
John Olson is a program director of Nielsen House, an alumnus of Nielsen, part of the Spiritus Christi Prison Outreach program. John, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And Lisa Buscemi is house manager for Jennifer House and an alumnus as well. Lisa, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
There's an event, a virtual fundraiser to support Jennifer House and the goal to purchase and move to a new Nielsen House, and that's coming up on March 20th, 6 to 7 p.m. It's going to be via the Spiritus Christi live stream, via Facebook, and on YouTube, a big goal of raising $200,000, and we'll talk about that coming up here in just a moment. But I want to start with Jim Smith, who's been working with incarcerated men and women for the past 40 years now. You go back 40 years ago. What was different, Jim? Tell me about what has changed.
Sure. 40, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. 40 years ago, the term reentry was non-existent. I think in 40 years ago, our society had a sense that when someone was incarcerated and did their time and came back out in the community, if it was difficult, that was part of the consequences, almost like a double jeopardy. People couldn't get a job. They might not be able to find housing. And so community was not really mindful of reentry as something that is in the best interest of all of us in the community. Instead, I think we were much more punitive. With time, people have started to realize that, hey, listen, these men and women are coming back into our neighborhood. They have served their time in jail or prison. It's in our best interest to meet them before they get out and really help prepare them for a successful transition and to provide the resources they needed so that they can reach their goals and become contributing members of society.
Jim, one of the themes that I want to work through this hour, and it comes up in the book, are the different approaches to people who are incarcerated, personal accountability versus systemic paths that lead many people down certain roads. I mean, I know it's complex, but I also sure. I also want to ask you right out of the gate here for listeners, if we're going to sort of generalize here, progressives tend to be more concerned about prison populations at large. They're concerned about the systemic reasons that sort of black and brown people end up in prison more often. People who come from poverty end up in prison more often. Conservatives, generally speaking, are a little concerned that if we overemphasize the systemic issues, we take away personal accountability, and that people who make good choices and work hard can succeed despite challenges. And I think those are both sort of understandable and admirable positions. But if you look at the impact of what you're doing, just looking at the impact, if all you did was talk about money and what taxpayers pay, which is sort of crude, but if that's all you did, you'd be still making, I think, a compelling argument here, because the savings to taxpayers of keeping 100 people out of prison or jail for a year is over $3 million. So it strikes me that if 40 years ago no one was talking about reentry, everybody should, no matter your politics, because it is a good thing for society and it's good for taxpayers when it works. Is that fair?
That's absolutely correct. Yes, it's really in everybody's best interest. It's extremely expensive to incarcerate somebody, and historically, about 70% of people may be reincarcerated after they come out if the resources aren't there for them. And we can greatly reduce that if we're able to provide housing, structure, guidance, really invite people to continue to address the issues that contributed to incarceration and help them get out and stay out. So, yes, it's definitely in everybody's best interest.
You've got Jennifer House and Nielsen House. How many people are you serving on an annual basis?
So we, through the two houses, that's emergency, transitional, and they're also called rapid rehousing now, we can serve about 100 people into Jennifer House and Nielsen House. Additionally, we have 50 apartments that the graduates of Jennifer House and Nielsen House can transition to after they've done the hard work of really reentering, building a foundation. That's something we learned years ago, is that people did all this work to try to stay clean and stay sober, address their mental health issues, and then they might leave Jennifer House and Nielsen House and end up into maybe an impoverished neighborhood that was surrounded by lots of drugs and some of the same people that they're in places that they were trying to avoid in the past. And we said, hey, listen, this is crazy. Let's try to get people housing. Let's try to have case management on site for them. Let's be there so that we can continue to support them. Because it's not just a quick fix, help someone get started and send them on their way. It's our desire and our goal, and what works well is being with people for long term. I mean, we have people that have been part of the program for many, many years and come back and volunteer. And then many of our employees are men and women who were incarcerated and went through Jennifer House and Nielsen House.
Yeah, and when you look at the actual stats, and I know you do your best to track it, and I've read that in a typical year, 80% of the program's participants are not reincarcerated on new charges. Is that correct?
Yeah, yep, and that's important. The new charges means that they picked up a new crime and that they were rearrested and reincarcerated. A hard statistic to track because you actually have to go to the jail and go to the jail records and really find out whether someone's been reincarcerated or not. And we were able to do that through a state grant a few years ago and found that 80% of our people were not reincarcerated on new charges during a 2-year period of time.
Well, I'm going to talk to your co-panelists in a moment here, but Jim, can you remind listeners you've got this March 20th event coming up here?
Yep.
And it's from 6 to 7 p.m., a virtual fundraiser supporting these causes here. That is coming up this coming weekend. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So we have a great opportunity for people to get involved. It's a wonderful chance to help us purchase this new property that we have been afforded an opportunity to gain for our new Nielsen House. It's the former Sojourner House and the former St. Monica's Convent. It's just a great structure, a great house, and we are trying to raise $200,000 to purchase and renovate it and get it ready for the men and to transition. And we'll also put our offices over there. So the fundraiser, people are sponsoring rooms for $5,000, so you can sponsor a room and to have it named after a loved one. People are finding this very, very attractive. We have a couple rooms that are going to be named after some alumni that went through the prison outreach that became friends of family, and families are pitching in and purchasing a room. But we also have what's called housewarming gifts and safe harbor nights, and we have a Maureen Nielsen Tree of Life, where there's a opportunity for people to put a loved one's name on a leaf and on a tree, and just really needs a whole community to help purchase this property and to renovate it and make it into a nice, safe, warm home. And so if anyone goes to our Spiritus Christi Prison Outreach webpage, you'll find everything you need to know there.
Lisa Buscemi is house manager and an alumnus of Jennifer House. And Lisa, if you could, can you tell me about your path to Jennifer House? And then we'll talk about the work you're doing now. But tell me a little bit about your story.
My story. I was hopeless, homeless, ended up in prison a couple different times. I've actually went through Jennifer House three different times. They allowed me back, gave me three chances, and by the grace of God, on that third chance, I just took off running. I'll tell you about this last time. I came May 3rd, 2017, right from Albion Correctional Facility, right to Jennifer House. I was stayed there for almost 9 months, really, really worked on me. Sarah Lee was my case manager. I was willing to take every suggestion that was thrown at me. I knew I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to die. I didn't want to go back to prison. Here I was coming up, 48 years old. I just didn't want to keep wasting my life. So they believed in me and loved me until I learned to love myself and believe in myself. I stayed there for 8 months, became the senior of the house. And then I moved into our apartment program at Frederick Douglass and stayed there, about 21 months, I believe. And then I moved into my own apartment at another Charlotte on the Loop, where we have 8 apartments there for our alumnas. I moved in here on my own, paying my own rent, my own bills. I got hired at Jennifer House right after I moved out and just flourished from there.
Lisa, how much of your struggle in staying out of prison and trying to move forward in life, how much of that was connected to drug addiction?
All of it. Mm-hmm. Every last bit of it. Like Jim was saying before, the second time I was at Jennifer House, I was there 9 months, and I decided to move into my own apartment, thought I had it. And before I knew it, I was right back to getting high again, wondering how I got there. Every last bit of everything I did was because of my drug addiction.
Mm-hmm. And so you said you didn't, the third time, you did not want to go back to prison. What was prison like?
lonely. You just felt less than, you had someone telling you when to eat, when to stand up, when to, you could go outside, when to breathe almost. I lost all hope in myself before I got there. But to be honest with you, this last time in prison saved my life. I went in totally convinced I was going to turn my life around and work on Lisa while I was there. And there's plenty of drugs in prison. And I could have used, but I knew if I used in prison, there was no way, any chance that I'd stay clean on the streets. Mm-hmm. So I worked very diligently, very hard on myself. I was doing work out of a recovery, Narcotics Anonymous, back and forth, sending homework back and forth with one of my sponsors. And I just worked there very diligently because I just didn't want to go back there. And to be honest with you, prison was better than being addicted to drugs. Drugs is a whole hell of its own and a whole prison of its own. And prison beat being addicted to drugs.
Wow. But you said that if you wanted to, you could have found drugs pretty easily in prison?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's plenty of drugs in prison. I remember going to the yard to play cards, get some fresh air and play cards, and there'd be people high all over the place. It's your mindset. And I just knew if I couldn't stay clean in prison, there was no way, no how that I'd stay clean once I got back to the streets again.
Yeah, I certainly take that point. Did you feel when you were in prison in any of the stints that you had mm-hmm. there, did you feel that the system, so to speak, society, cared about you and wanted you to be successful?
Absolutely not. We're a paycheck. I'm just keeping it real. An inmate is a paycheck. And half the time people would leave, and I've heard the correction officers like, oh, they'll be back. They keep our paychecks coming through. They don't set you up to succeed. They'll just release you to a homeless shelter, I don't want to say any of the homeless shelters, but they don't set you up for success at all, not one bit. I took it upon myself to reach out to Jennifer House and write and ask, can I please come back? I don't want to die.
Wow. And just one more note on that, if we could, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
What would it look like if our facility, I guess what I want to ask you is what you think ought to change. Because again, if we're going to sort of draw this along the lines of discourse, debate, and debate in this country, it's often political. Sometimes it's left-right. And I think there's a lot of good intention. I mean, I mentioned, I think the left is very concerned about, you know, who typically ends up in prison and why, and, you know, the forces at work there. And the right tends to be more concerned with personal accountability and responsibility. And I'm not trying to sort of cop out here, but I think both sides have important points to make here. But what does a system that is more effective look like, and what would you change?
I believe when people are incarcerated, if you have stable housing for them to come home to, right there is going to help the effectiveness of keeping someone from being reincarcerated. Having that stable housing, it's a known fact, without stable housing, it's hard to stay clean.
Yeah. How, and last question then for before I turn to some of the other panelists. I've read some pretty encouraging things about how you're doing now, spending time with family, a path to education. Tell me a little bit about life now.
Life, I wouldn't even dreamed I'd be where I am today. I'll be clean 5 years, May 4th. Been home 4 years, May 4th. And I would never in a million years believe I'm at where I'm at today. I'm proud of myself. I have my family back in my life. I have my son and grandson in my life. I'm able to step up and take care of my sick mother. I'm able to pay bills. You know, I look back from the, I was just talking to my dad about this a couple weeks ago. Like, I just cannot believe how far I've came. I believed in myself enough, and I worked very hard to get here. And it just seems like it was years and years ago that I was addicted, and years ago I was in prison. It's like it's a bad memory in my back of my head. I don't want to forget where I came from, don't get me wrong, but I don't ever want to go back to where I came from.
Well, and, you know, Lisa, reading A Place Not of My Choosing, producer Megan Mack was sharing some stories, reading along this weekend, and there are sections that get into the fact that there are times where family gives up on someone. How important is it for you that your family has not given up on you?
They did at a point.
Wow.
They did at a point because I gave up on myself. I truly believe that me working as hard as I have on me was for me, but also for my family to look back. Like, I remember about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I was leaving my father's house and his only daughter. And he's like, "Hey, Lisa." And I turned around. I said, "Yes." He said, "I am so proud of you." And I just broke down crying. And he's like, "What's wrong?" I can't tell you the last time I heard my father say that to me, if ever, you know. So it's very important that my family is in my corner now. And I'm so grateful to have had that another chance to be part of my family again.
That's fabulous. That is really a beautiful story. Sarah Lee is program director of Jennifer House. Are there some echoes in your own story, Sarah, when you hear Lisa talk about hers?
Yeah, so I'm really proud of Lisa. Thank you for sharing that, Lisa, with everyone. My story goes back to 2008. That was my last arrest here in Rochester. I was in the Monroe County Jail. I was part of Rochester Drug Treatment Court, and the recommendation was to come to Jennifer House. And so I did that after I exhausted all my other opportunities. So I came to Jennifer House in 2008 and really haven't looked back. I've been able to stay clean since 2008. I'm coming up on 13 years in July, God willing. And I just have a whole different life. I went through this program, and then I went through a couple other programs and into supportive living, and then was able to start going to school. And I went to MCC for addictions counseling and got my associate's there. And then I went and got my bachelor's at Brockport and my master's at Nazareth. And now I'm currently enrolled at the U of R for my doctorate degree in counseling and human development.
Wow.
So I'm very proud of how far I've came. But like Lisa said, you know, I never want to forget where I came from. My life is just totally different. I'm married now. I have a child. and yeah, it's just amazing to be able to be present and to show up for myself and show up for others and be part of an awesome organization.
How many stories like yours, like Lisa, are you seeing on an annual basis, Sarah?
We hear him all the time. We see him all the time. You know, we like to think I'm currently the director of Jennifer House. So I started working at Jennifer House as the director in 2016. And prior to that, I was interning and then a per diem staff member. And, you know, it's just a beautiful thing to watch somebody be able to grow in their process. And, you know, women come to the front door in handcuffs and shackles. And, you know, I've always said we should take before and after pictures, because when they leave out, they're just different women, you know. They're broken and they're traumatized and they're hurt and they're in a lot of pain. And when they leave out and they go to their own apartment, and to be able to share that with them and watch them walk that journey and walk with them is just an amazing, it's just a gift. It really is.
Now, if I could ask you as well, Sarah, kind of building on what Lisa talked about with a society that hasn't always emphasized, frankly is still not really emphasizing all that much, rehabilitation and a path to success after incarceration. Is there a unique challenge for women who come out of prison, Sarah?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that differs from other populations and other genders is that it's you know, the level of trauma and the types of abuse and the types of trauma differ significantly. And so with the women, you know, we focus on what their needs are, and we meet them where they're at. And, you know, we service them based on what it is that they need. A lot of our women are linked up with other community partners, such as Willow and Restore and other community partners that we've partnered with specifically so the women can get their needs met.
And now tell me a little bit about your hopes as you get ready for an important fundraiser and maybe what a vision of Jennifer House is going forward if you're successful here, Sarah.
So it's just so much, you know, it's such an honor to know that, you know, the gift of a mansion for the poor, you know, it's just amazing to think that, you know, we'll be able to house so many more men. And, you know, the office space that's here at Jennifer House will be transitioning over to the Millbank property. And so that opens up some more space here at Jennifer House and more opportunities for us here as far as more residents go and office space for some of the employees. But if this, you know, I'm very hopeful. I don't want to say if, but, you know, it's a success already. And the fact that, you know, we've been called to do this great work and to have this beautiful vacancy over there on Millbank Street to do it. And so it just takes us to the next level. You know, it just takes us to the next level, and we're able to help more people, and we're able to provide safe, stable, quality care and a home. And that's really important to the population we serve.
Mm-hmm. Let me get a phone call. This is Jane in Rochester on the line. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Hi. So I want to really commend all of the staff, and especially Jim Smith. My husband and I have been supporters of the prison outreach for probably about 20 years, and we've watched it grow. Jim is brilliant in his leadership. Because there have been a lot of changes, and as he sees the latest effective practice, he implements it. And I worked in the nonprofit field for 30 years, focusing a lot on effectiveness. And I've got to say, he is just a stellar example of making very smart choices, growing the program slowly, implementing new practices that work. And their success is just off the charts. I wish they have room for quadruple of what they have now, because there's the need for it. But they've grown slowly and reasonably, and the impact on people's lives has been absolutely unbelievable. So I really want to thank them for the impact they're having in our community.
Jane, I know they appreciate it. Jim, do you want to add to that?
Just thank you so much, Jane. That's very, very generous. I think what Jane represents is this is a community effort, and it takes all of us to be a part of it. And there's hundreds and hundreds of people behind the scenes, and a church community and a broader community that makes this work. And so it's great to be a part of it. And thanks Jane for being a part of it for so many years.
Thank you for the phone call, Jane. And before I let Lisa Buscemi go, we're going to welcome in a Nielsen House alumnus after our only break here. Lisa, if I could just ask before we go here, you know, there are so many people in our society who are going to end up on a path that maybe when they were kids, they didn't think that their life would go down, but for various reasons it does. And it can be, as you said, it can be easy to lose all hope and to think that society doesn't care about you and doesn't care about your life and what happens to you. What is your message for anyone who has a family member or a loved one in that position, or for someone who might be in that position themselves, about feeling a loss of hope?
I would say to the family members of a family person that is struggling, don't give up. Do not give up on them. Be there for them when they're ready to be there for themselves. And for the people that are struggling, don't give up on yourselves. There's hope. I'm living proof that there's hope, and there is a whole other side of living to the what we're used to, being addicted, you know, homeless. Just don't give up on yourself and just keep praying.
Lisa, I want to congratulate you on the success that you've had, and I think just telling your story impacts so many people, let alone the work you're doing at Jennifer House. Thank you for being with us this hour.
Thank you so much.
We have to take our only break, and we're going to come back. We're going to hear from John Olson and Cody Spracker about what's been going on with the Nielsen House. Sarah Lee is going to stay with us. Jim Smith with us from Spiritus Christi Prison Outreach, talking about decades of work and their plans for the future as we think about populations of people in prison who might feel like no one cares about them, no one loves them, everyone's given up on them. And it's not true. Our guests say it's easy to feel that way, but with some personal accountability and determination, and then some of these outside lines of help, there's a path forward. And we're going to keep hearing those stories. I think you're going to want to hear what's next. Coming up in our second hour, we see the pictures and videos from NASA's rover that's on Mars right now. It's gripping stuff, but is it evidence of where humankind can live in the future? Elon Musk thinks so. Science writer Shannon Sterone says that's a fantasy and a dangerous one. She'll join us along with astrophysicist Adam Frank talking about Mars and humankind's future next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and I want to welcome in Cody Spracker, who is a Nielsen House alumnus, on the line with us now. Cody, thanks for making the time. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I appreciate you being here. And I want to start with John Olson, who is the program director of Nielsen House. And John, if you could, I know you're originally from Long Island, moved to Western New York in 2012, and you've got a passion for a mission that stems from your own personal journey. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. My personal journey, I came to Monroe County and I had some charges, and I've been arrested maybe 40 times plus in the past. And I was put into drug court with Judge Elliott. And through that journey I got in trouble a couple of times in drug court. They kept giving me little sanctions and everything. And then he had enough and mandated me to go to Nielsen House. I tried to deny going to Nielsen House because I think looking back on it, I was kind of scared of trying something new because I did incarceration pretty well. I was pretty used to it. And for them to send me to a halfway house, that was all brand new. When I did get to the halfway house, it was something that I've never seen before. It was recovery, sobriety, and structure, which I was lacking in all areas. I never knew what sobriety was. And then on my journey, I stayed there for approximately 4 months. I got into an apartment program, and then I got into permanent supportive housing here at Voters Block. My case manager was actually Jim Smith. And through some of our case management sessions, and we created some goals. And one of my goals was to eventually work at Nielsen House. And I started working there part-time and haven't left. So I worked part-time for about a year, completed the permanent supportive housing program because I got a job, and then I went back and I was a case manager, continued to put in the work and became house manager, and then eventually when our past director resigned, I was offered the opportunity to interview for the director job, and I was hired. And I've been there ever since.
Can I ask you, when the judge said, you know, you got to go to Nielsen House, what did you know about it? What did you expect from it?
I just honestly, I took it as a way to get out of jail, because if I got released to the house and then I would have another opportunity out on the street, and I thought I could just leave at any time, and then worst comes to worst, I'll just be going back to jail and finish my sentence.
Okay. How many people who you think end up in Nielsen have that mentality too? And are you sort of, having been on that path, are you cognizant of that? Do you work to sort of immediately start changing expectations and ideas about it?
Well, sure. It is brand new for a lot of people. And once they embrace the love at the door and, you know, we're open to where they're at with their individual plans. I mean, if they have family issues, it's drugs and alcohol, we're able to address it, but at a warm, comforting level.
Now, now that you are in this position here, tell me a little bit about how your own life is different.
Well, my life today is something totally different. I mean, my whole entire background was construction and painting and jobs like of that nature. And now today it's helping people. And for that, for myself, I mean, that really helps me with my own sobriety. I've been sober for almost 7 years now. And to be on a path to, you know, give back what was basically freely given to me is just an honor.
We've been talking to guests about whether they think society, the system, so to speak, cares about them. Do you think it's fair for a lot of people who end up incarcerated, John, to feel like the system doesn't care what happens to me? Do you think that's a fair thing for people to think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, it's there for a reason. I got put in jail for a reason. I always thought it was someone else's problem and never my own. But once I was able to have a minute to sit back and look at my choices in life, and the willingness to accept the help that is around me is when things started to change. But while you're incarcerated, the only feeling I had was hopelessness.
Well, you've got an event coming up here. It's a virtual fundraiser supporting Jennifer House and purchase and move to a new Nielsen house. The event is March 20th from 6 to 7 p.m. That's coming up on Saturday, and it's via the Spiritus Christi live stream, via Facebook, via YouTube. Their goal, raising $200,000, and they would love for everyone listening to be a part if you decided you wanted to do that. How important is this event, and how do you see the future for Nielsen, John?
Well, we are definitely expanding, and this new property is just a blessing for so many men to come. It has got more bedrooms. Every man would have their own room. There's 8 bathrooms, so we'll never have that problem in the morning when everyone needs to get ready. And plus, with everything going on with COVID, everybody will have their own room, their own space, so it'll be a lot easier to socially distance.
I'm looking down the list here. I mean, you know, the people who have been through these programs and then gone on to work for these programs. John, when people come through, people like Cody Spracker, do you know most of them by name? I mean, do you get to know them? Do you try to stay on top of how their outcomes go?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that's sort of like how we know if someone's being successful. They stay in touch and they continue the same routine and schedule that they were doing while at Nielsen House, just incorporating some new things, maybe some job training, schooling, or, you know, full-time employment. But we always like to stay in touch with everyone.
Well, before we get Cody's story, John, as you mentioned, full-time employment, employment is something that has been hotly debated in public discourse for years, especially in this community, with talks about employers who won't hire someone who's been incarcerated or, you know, doesn't call you back based on what your resume looks like or what you've been through. How challenging is that, and how much do men in particular sort of feel like, I'm not going to get a job. No one's going to hire me.
Yeah, it is tough when you have, you know, felonies on your record, but there are some opportunities out there. I wish there was more. But again, they just need the opportunity, really, to prove and, you know, just have an equal shot just like anybody else.
Cody Spracker is a Nielsen House alumnus, and Cody, we're grateful that you're with us. Can you tell us your story?
So, you know, I started drinking when I was 16, 17 out of high school, you know. Ended up tearing my ACL, so I decided to go to Onondaga Community College because I'm from Syracuse. So I went there, and that's really when it my drinking really took off, you know. 19, I got a DWI, crashed through a house, and I just continued the process of just drinking, dropped out of school, tried to go back, dropped out, tried to go back, this, that, and everything. You know, I didn't think I had a problem. Turned 25, and I got my second DWI at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Still didn't think I had a problem, you know. Continued, and then when I turned 27, I got my third DWI. You know, and that still didn't really bother me. You know, I got arrested in between here and there, you know, went to jail for like weekends, weeks, stuff like that, but never really bothered me. You know, I just thought I was living life. You know, I just used the excuse of, I'm young, you know, 20s, it's all right. But then it really got into a problem when I ended up catching two felony charges on probation. A probation officer and the judge told me that I was looking at 3.5 to 7 upstate. So they gave me an option of recovery or to take time. And obviously no one wants to do that. So I picked it, and I picked the recovery, and I didn't want to do that. You know, but I was going to do it to get myself out of trouble. So, you know, about like a week into it, probably, I really started to come to like my mind and start thinking about things and everything. And like, you know, I just had the worst feeling ever in the bottom of my stomach. It was like an empty pit that just was eating away at me, you know, and it was just really, it was just memories filled of like everything that I'd done wrong and done. And I never wanted to feel that feeling again. So I spent 3 more weeks at that rehab. And I did the most I could to figure out everything when I was there. When I left that rehab, I wanted to keep my recovery. So I ended up I couldn't go back to my parents' house because of my dad's an alcoholic. So I had to go to my grandparents' house. And I applied to other rehabs because I knew I needed more help. So when I got out, I went straight to an AA meeting, and then it took about 3 weeks to a month to get into the next program that I was going to go into. I went to the next program. I stayed for 5 months, and I hated every minute of it, but I loved it at the same time because it taught me so much about myself and how to deal with myself and be alone at one point, you know. And, you know, and then I was going to move back to Syracuse, but, you know, my probation officer was kind of like, you know, maybe you should check out other places. And I ended up checking out Buffalo, Albany, and the wait list were ridiculously long. So someone told me about the Nielsen House in Rochester, and they said prison outreach. So I'm like, oh, all right, you know, it's going to be full of people just coming straight out of prison, and I'm coming from rehab. But whatever, I was willing to give it a shot, you know. So I called John, and I probably annoyed him to no other because I was calling him like every Tuesday and Friday nonstop. And he was like, you know, finally he said, yes, we have a bed open for you if you want to come in Monday. I think it was a Monday. It was March 4th. And so I ended up going there, got there, and, you know, everyone there was welcoming. It was a great feeling, you know, because usually when you're in active use, you don't really have that feeling of love and like caring or anything, you know. It's all just about using. There's nothing else. So, you know, they took me in, they gave me like, they told me where my bedroom was. My roommate was great guy, and, you know, he showed me around. And then, you know, I got the hang of it, and just being there, you know, I got so many more opportunities that came across my path, you know. And all the staff there helped me with amazing everything, you know. Like I'm going back to school now, and I'm in the supportive living here now. You know, I got set up with some peer advocacy that I'm gonna go to school for in April, and just everything was just set up as I went, you know. And I just, all I had to do was I had to do the work. It was there for me. I just had to do the work, and that was something I never had. I've never done, you know, it was completely different for me. And, you know, and I ended up staying at the Nielsen house, I think, for about 11 months. Yeah, 11 months I stayed there, and I just got into my apartment February 1st. So,
wow. How you doing?
Yeah. I'm doing great. You know, like right now I have a 3.7 grade point average in school. I have my puppy that I have, and I take him to obedience. You know, John's giving me a couple of rides there because, like, I don't have a license, obviously. So, but the thing is it's really, you know, I've stayed in contact with everyone, and everyone's there to help. You know what I mean? And as long as I do the next right thing, I know the next right thing is going to be there for me. So,
what's the puppy's name, Cody?
Arlo.
That's awesome. What kind of dog?
He's a Vizsla. It's a
Vizsla. Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, that's a gorgeous dog, man. That's a lot of energy, though. Good luck to you.
That's the best thing is I volunteer Saturday nights at the house, and I bring him over there. Everyone loves him. He plays with everyone. I get there a little early, you know, before everyone goes to bed, and he loves it. And I go back to, like, the meetings on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, bring him with me, and he acts like it's his house.
I love that. And you know what? I mean, I'm sure you already know this, Cody. I mean, having Arlo, but, you know, animals, as long as you love them, their love is unconditional. They don't ask what your life was like or where you've been all day. They're just thrilled to see you. And there is something amazing about an animal like that that would love you above any other human being out of 7 billion on the planet. There's something beautiful about that. I think maybe we can learn from that. But I'm just glad to hear things are going really, really well for you now. And I'm just really grateful that you're telling this story. And Jim Smith, these stories ever get old to you, sir, as the executive director of Spiritus Christi Prison
absolutely
Outreach?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. I'm, you know, filled with tears today as I hear them. They touch my heart deeply. They re-energize me. They're what keep me going. And it's just such a privilege to be a part of other people's journeys and their willingness to share their story so humbly and beautifully. I find very inspiring and so grateful to be a part of their lives and in this wonderful work.
I want to ask you, Jim, if I could, about an approach that, you know, maybe I'm, I don't know if I'm, you know, necessarily getting it exactly right, but it seems to me to sort of split the difference between the CEFAS program, you know, some which can be tough love accountability, and something really sort of empathetic and loving. And I'm going to read from Jim Callen's book, A Place Not of My Choosing, Jim Smith and the Spiritus Christi Prison Outreach. And this is just sort of a little vignette from a prison yard and what some of the mentality can be. So reading from the book now, an inmate in the group shared that his girlfriend had just given birth to their baby. He was very proud and told the group, despite all my mistakes, at least I know I'm a good dad. And Harold, one of the workers, butted in, you're a good dad? Most good dads I know are at the hospital when their woman gives birth, and they're with their kids as they grow up. How can you be a good dad if you're here in prison? Another inmate was bragging about himself. Everyone in the yard looks up to me because they recognize my strength, he said. They know I'm a real man. Harold told him, you think you're a real man? Having muscles doesn't make you a real man. Holding a gun and shooting up a grocery store doesn't make you a real man. Being a real man means standing on your own 2 feet and sacrificing yourself. It means going to work every day and taking care of your family. That's what a real man is. And there was an inmate who was new to the group that day and remained quiet. Harold prodded him. What are you about? He asked. The man said, I'm in prison because I got screwed over out there. My business partner screwed me over. My girl screwed me over. The cop, the judge. Harold sat there watching him play the victim and assign blame to everyone but himself. Finally, Harold confronted the man. Did you ever notice that everywhere you go, it smells like blank? He was trying to make a point. Jim, you know, Harold's tough. Harold is saying to these guys in this scene from the book, I'm not gonna accept your whining about who did you wrong. You did yourself wrong. That's why you're here. That is tough. And as the book kind of describes, many people in that position need to hear that. Tell me about your feelings about the approach, whether it's CFIS program, tough love, accountability, but also understanding structural problems in society that lead some people down certain roads. How do you balance all that?
Sure. Yeah, first, I would say just extremely grateful to CFIS because they really were my mentor, as well as Corpus Christi Spiritus Christi's guide to do this work. We were trying to do it, and we were really fumbling back in the 1980 with Rogers House and what they showed us in those groups, which I participated in quite a bit, was really how to be with people and to certainly be honest and direct with people, but also that people were, no matter what they had done in their life, they were very much more like me than different than me, that we all struggle as human beings. And I think if you ever saw Harold Steele or Ken and there's another gentleman named Chris Tillman, they were very large in stature. And here I'm about 5'8" and pretty small in stature. And I was thinking, well, I think what I realized is I don't have to be like Cephas or like Ken or like Harold, that I need to find my own way to be with people and to invite them to see the truth of their life and their own reality and do it in a way that is right for me. And so those are things that I've certainly learned over the years. I think school was extremely helpful. Going from my master's of social work really helped to, there's many, many approaches to really being with people and helping them to reach the truth about their own lives. I think CFIS always is very much like kind of the MASH TV show, where they were out in the fields really working kind of under circumstances that needed immediate attention. And I was just able in Corpus Christi, Spiritus Christi, was able to find a different approach. But without CFIS help, I'm not sure that we would have ever got there. They really helped us to recognize how important it was to go into the prisons, into the jails, and build a relationship with people first. Because I think that's what it's really about, is the relationship of trust that forms with an individual and knowing and being there when they get out, when they're released, being at the door and saying, hey, come with us. We'll provide a new home, a new structure, a new guidance, tons of love. All you need to do is really work on building a foundation within yourself that you can sustain throughout your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a reminder for people who feel like that their life doesn't count or it's functionally over, that you can have many lives, maybe 9 lives, as Father Callan refers in his book to you, Jim. You yes. know, why does he refer to the 9 lives of yours?
Let's see before coming to the Corpus Christi, I was young and reckless and was in a serious car accident and really came to the church looking for people to help guide me in my own faith journey because I didn't really know how to do it. I knew I couldn't do it alone, and I needed a community around me to help me stay on a path that was going to help me to really live the deepest life that I believed I was called to be. And the men and women that you've heard today and that I've surrounded myself through the grace of the prison outreach have done that for the last 40 years, and that's an incredible gift.
Well, I want to thank our guests, and I'm going to remind you now, March 20th is Saturday. It is Saturday, isn't it, Jim? It's been a long weekend.
Yes, it's this coming Saturday. Yeah, it is. It's this coming Saturday, yep.
This coming Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m., it's a virtual fundraiser to support Jennifer House, Nielsen House, and Spiritus Christi's prison outreach. And it's happening via the Spiritus Christi live stream. You can find it on Facebook, YouTube. And if you've got the time and the inclination, and now you've heard the stories, they would love for you to be a part of it. They're going to try to raise $200,000 or more, and they have ambitious goals about helping even more people in this community. And down to our last minute or so, let me just bring back Sarah Lee just for a moment and ask you, I asked Jim if you ever sort of get tired or even cynical about all the stories. For you, Sarah, those same stories, how do those stories hit you today after all the years that you've been through yourself and now working on this program?
Yeah, hearing everybody's stories just empowers me to keep doing what we do and just gives me more hope for the future and for those that are yet to come through our doors. I never get tired of hearing the stories because it's just part of who we are. and it's our makeup. It's in our DNA, you know, to really be able to listen and be there with folks and listen to how it was and what happened and what it's like now. And, you know, to give us more motivation to continue doing what we do. So I'm really grateful to hear the stories today. And I love our organization. I love our staff and all of our residents and the people that are yet to come. And we pray every day for those that are here and those that are that haven't made their way yet.
I mean, these are people on our program today who are unequivocally making our world better. And there's not many people you can say that with confidence and not even blink about it. Certainly I don't feel that way about myself all the time, but there's just no question. And I'm just moved by it. So let me thank them. Cody Spracker, good luck to you. And again, I admire you so much. Thanks for telling your story. I know you're going to be doing very well in this community. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Our thanks to John Olson, Program Director of Nielsen House. Thank you, John. Good luck to you and the whole team there.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Lisa Buscemi joined us earlier this hour. Thanks to her. Sarah Lee from Jennifer House. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
And Jim Smith, Executive Director of Spiritus Christi Prison Outreach. Good luck to you, Jim. Let's talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Evan. Appreciate it.
And more connections coming up in a moment.